Welcome to the QB List Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Eric Smith, and I am joined by Drew DeLuca. As always, this is our Week 4 Sit-Start Podcast. We are here to go through Drew's rankings, compare them to Fantasy Pros Expert Consensus Rankings, and help you out a little bit with some of your toughest sit-start decisions. So excited to have you, excited to get into this. Please check out the website, as always, our sit-start article with practically the entire QB List staff helping out on that one. So we go really in-depth, so please check that out. So Drew, lots of news in the NFL. We should probably get into it pretty quickly, but what's new with you? What's new heading into Week 4?
Not too much. Just hoping we stay on top of these injuries. So we saw a lot of people, like we talked about before. We had Aaron Rodgers, we had Nick Chubb, and then on the other side of the ball, you know, Trayvon Diggs from the Cowboys went down for the season. Yeah. So, and Mike Williams this past week. So hopefully we can get through a whole week without losing anybody. Hopefully we can just kind of get through with intact fantasy lineups for once. So, but yeah, let's get into the news. Yeah, let's get into those news. Yep.
Yeah, so. The Mike Williams one was a tough one for me. I think every team I drafted, I either had Keenan Allen or Mike Williams. So maybe it was helped a little bit by the fact that Keenan Allen went off last week. But yeah, tough to see him go down. So as always, check out the what we saw on Waiver Wire podcast on Monday nights. They've been doing great work over there. But yeah, let's get into this. Let's get into the news. We're going to try to start it out a little bit positive here. Austin Eckler. He was limited in practice on Wednesday with an ankle injury. So they do have a bye week next. So there's always the thought maybe they'll just hold him out another week and be safe. But Eckler is close to coming back, it looks like, Drew. So I know my kind of thoughts go straight to Josh Kelly here. Like, do we still want to hold him? It's been a disappointing couple weeks. So obviously we're playing Eckler when he comes back. But what about Josh Kelly here? Do you have any hopes for him?
Not really. I think he's had his opportunities here and he did not make the most of them. And I know one of them was a tough draw, but he should have shown more than he did, frankly, for me to want to keep holding him with Eckler on the brink of coming back. And there's so many good potential stashes that are sitting out there. Marvin Mims, who we'll probably talk about later, being one of them. If I'm looking to stash a guy like that who's out there, Josh Kelly's probably going to be one of the first on my roster to go.
Yeah, we're really getting towards that part of the season where you feel the roster crunch. There's like a lot of players you want to roster. And we've already seen Kelly with nearly like 100% snap share kind of let us down. I mean, we're talking like under 5 fantasy points. So, yeah, I'm probably holding him just until Eckler's back on the field. But I get it if you just wanted to bail on him this week because there's just been nothing there. I think it really shows that Austin Eckler's a good player. So I think this cemented that for us. So, okay, next up, Cooper Kupp. Word from the Rams, finally got some news on him. They are hoping he returns in Week 5. Hope was in quotes. So maybe not a ringing endorsement that he's going to be back as soon as he can get off the IR. I don't know. I think there's probably enough doubt here that we keep holding Tutu Atwell, who's been playing pretty well. Puka Nacua should be locked into your roster, I think, at this point. What are your thoughts on Cooper Kupp and just this Rams wide receiver situation?
Well, I mean, I think you just keep Kupp on your IR until, you know, until he comes back, really. That's what it is. And I'm still playing Atwell and Puka if I have them, for sure. So I picked up Atwell for $0, I think it was, in Scott Fishbowl. And I was pretty happy with that. And so he's been starting for me. Actually led the division in scoring this week, which is pretty nice. So that's without Nick Chubb. So my team and Joe Burrow. I didn't start Joe Burrow either. I ended up starting Baker Mayfield, and it actually worked out. Him and Jordan Love. So, but yeah, Atwell's been good. He's been a steady producer, and I see no reason for that to no longer be the case until Kupp comes back. And even then, I think Atwell's going to have a role. Puka, I don't know that he's going to be as dominant once Kupp comes back. But that's a story for another day. We have to see Kupp on the field before we can even start having that conversation.
Yep, I would have some optimism. Mm-hmm. I mean, Puka Nacua has been playing out wide a little bit more than Cooper Kupp does, so he may have kind of a Robert Woods role in the offense. And then Tutu Atwell last week scored a touchdown late on a reception, and he could have had a rushing touchdown on a 20-plus yard run, stepped just barely out of bounds. So, I think they're both looking good, and if the line can block for Stafford, this is a productive offense. So that part might be a little questionable, but yes. I don't know. The receivers look good.
Yep.
All right. Derek Carr, New Orleans Saints quarterback, shoulder injury, did not practice Wednesday. Doesn't sound like a big-time major injury, but seems like we've got a week of Jameis Winston coming up here. So what do you think about the Saints kind of short-term here as we deal with this injury?
Well, I watched that game and I actually covered it for the What We Saw effort for the site here this past week. So Carr did lead with a shoulder injury. At first, they thought it was concussion, but then it turned out to be a shoulder. But Jameis Winston came in. He statistically looked okay, but from what we've watched, what we saw, he looked kind of lost in the offense. He didn't come in and fire at all, really. He and the receivers weren't on the same page. He and Michael Thomas did connect quite a few times, though, which was interesting and good to see, because Carr and Thomas hadn't really kind of been on the same page, Winston looked his way early and often. So I think Michael Thomas gets a bump if Jameis Winston starts. And we'll talk a little bit more about Alvin Kamara later. I think he gets a little bit of a bump in that situation from having Winston in there over Carr as well. But I don't think we have to worry about Taysom Hill too much. He still comes in a few times, but I don't think this is the point where he's really going to limit too much what Winston would bring to the table. So Winston, I think, is your guy this week, and I would be surprised if Carr plays again in 2 weeks from now as well. He's not practicing now. He's nowhere near ready to practice. So when you have a franchise quarterback, which is what they're really kind of bringing him in to be, that's kind of, it's just, why would you rush him back from a major injury like that when you have a capable veteran like Jameis Winston ready to kind of keep the fort, the boat afloat, if you will.
Yeah, I'm always amazed how optimistic the community is on Jameis Winston whenever he gets a chance. I can't tell if it's just enjoyment from that 30-pick, 30-touchdown season, or if people genuinely think he's a really good quarterback. I'm a little lower than him on, I think, most fantasy analysts. But, he was, completing 25 passes a game when he played for 3 starts last year. So, I mean, he's got a little bit in the tank. There's definitely worse backup quarterback situations around the league. So, I don't think we need to downgrade too many players on the Saints a whole lot with Jameis Winston in.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's get to Christian Watson on the Packers. Looks like he is trending towards playing. That's going to be a really nice addition to that offense that's looked pretty impressive so far.
Agreed. Yeah, so he's one thing about Jordan Love. I saw something on the Twitter today about somebody who's kind of downplaying him is the fact that he didn't pass an eye test and that his completion percentage was only 53% and something like that. But he's playing without his 2 starting offensive linemen. He played without Christian Watson this past week. He played without Aaron Jones this past week. He did not look good for the first 3 quarters, but came back and just absolutely put the team on his shoulder and literally won that game for the Packers. So that, to me, speaks volumes about him as a competitor and him as a quarterback, and kind of answered a lot of questions for me about, is Jordan Love for real? So that's when you see a guy, sometimes people, your team's just kind of mailed in. You're down 18 points. That wasn't the case with Jordan Love. He's a competitor. And he was able to, get it done too. He's fine in Romeo Doubs. He's fine in Jalen Reed. He's looking around Luke Musgrave, the rookie. He's even without Watson, he's still getting it done. So I do worry when Watson comes back about, are they going to be able to kind of feed all those guys? Who's going to emerge as the alpha? We're assuming it's Watson, but we've seen flashes from the other guys as well. So very interested to see how it all plays out once Watson comes back to full health.
Yeah, I mean, they gave 52 snaps to Dontavian Wicks last week, and he had 6 targets. So I think there is room for Watson there. And they have been throwing it deep. Love has one of the higher average depth of targets in the league, which should fit Christian Watson pretty well. So, just got to make sure he's healthy before you throw him in your lineup. But when Watson is out there playing, I think he's going to have some spike weeks for sure. So,
All right. And Ryan Heath will be proud of you for saying that, because he's, like myself, he's a Christian Watson truther. So there's that.
Yeah, we'll give him some credit. He doesn't get them all right, but he talked me into James Cook before the season started, so I got to thank him for that one. So
that's right.
Definitely reaping the benefits on James Cook. So, all right, let's get to the Dolphins. Not that they really need it, but it looks like Jalen Waddle is on his way back, so they'll be at full strength. And then kind of another team, the Indianapolis Colts, Anthony Richardson, he's full participant in practice coming off his concussion. So 2 teams that are doing pretty well so far in the season, got a little more reinforcements coming. So looking good in Miami and Indianapolis right now.
For sure.
All right, let's get on to Rashad Bateman, hamstring, and Odell Beckham Jr. with an ankle. Both did not practice on Wednesday. So yeah, the injuries continue in the Ravens passing game. I don't know. I think it's just...
And
the backfield. We don't even mention that at this point. But yeah, Gus Edwards did at least return to practice from his concussion. But I don't know. Like, obviously, if you have Bateman or OBJ, it's not great news. But if you have Flowers, if you have Mark Andrews, like, I don't know. The offense still looks good most of the time when they're not turning it over. I guess we're just waiting and seeing on these other parts of the offense. But I do think that if you have Flowers or Andrews, you can feel happy at least.
Yeah, Andrews does not have a plus matchup this week against the Browns, who are one of statistically one of the toughest against in the league against tight ends. But he's going to see volume anyway, so that's there's that. So I don't know. I think he could have one of those, you know, 11 target, you know, five catch, you know, 55 yards and a touchdown kind of a games. That could be what we're looking at there for Andrews. But the way that our tight end landscape it looks this year, that's probably still a top five tight end. So, but I think Andrews will see a lot of targets. And, of course, Flowers, they just keep looking for ways to involve him in the offense. I think this is just only good things for him as well, for sure.
Yeah, and I kind of glossed over the Anthony Richardson part, but watching that game, Ravens-Colts last week, I thought Gardner Minshew looked just awful in that game, at least what I saw of it. I mean, he was backpedaling, running around the pocket, just buying time, not finding anyone open. So that's going to be exciting to get Richardson back because I don't think even though they beat the Ravens, I don't know how many weeks you can get out of Gardner Minshew at that rate. So, it's just some good updates from injury news there for sure. So the Ravens' opponent this week is the Cleveland Browns. Kareem Hunt did not practice, just a week back with the team, and he's got some rib and groin injuries. So probably looking good here, Jerome Ford, regardless. But if Hunt's going to be out, definitely, you know, all things are looking good here for Ford if you got him off waivers last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think he had, a two-touchdown game with very minimal yardage. And so we generally call that like a luck bag kind of a game from Jerome Ford, but he's going to see volume if Hunt's not in there. So, I think it's a good thing. I know the Ravens are not the easiest defense in the world for sure, but chances are if you pick Jerome Ford off of waivers and you're looking to use him, you probably don't have a better option.
Yeah, Ford had 40 snaps last week, Kareem Hunt 14, Pierre Strong 8. So, I mean, he still had the dominating workload, but if you're worried about Hunt eating into it a little bit, this might delay it a little bit further. So, all right. Next up, Deebo Samuel did not practice, rib and knee injuries, left Thursday night game, but returned. Not serious. The status is in question. I think just alarm bells go off anytime we see the Deebo Samuel injuries start up because he's so good when he's healthy, but his running style kind of leads to some injuries. So hopefully he can stay on the field, Drew, because that's certainly a fun offense to watch.
Absolutely, yeah. And Brandon Ayuk is questionable still as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. So if Debo's in and Ayuk is out, then Deebo, to me, is the guy I want in my lineup. And I think they'll be leaning on him pretty heavily if Ayuk's not there. But I think if Ayuk is, if they're both playing, I can see them kind of dialing it back a little bit on Samuel and using a little bit more of Christian McCaffrey, using a little bit more of Elijah Mitchell. And Kittle, we haven't really seen him kind of go off just yet. So they had the luxury of being able to kind of pick their poison. So there's no reason. I think if Debo's good to go, he'll know it. And that's something to watch. So, just put it on your radar if you have Deebo Samuel and Ayuk for that matter. So just make sure you have some backup options available in case either or both can't go.
Yeah, and Kittle was really close to going off last week with Ayuk out. You could really see with one less option in the offense, he was getting a ton of targets, got a bunch of catches, just didn't quite have that blow-up touchdown game. But we need to remind ourselves when we're setting rankings, when they're missing one of these weapons, Kittle gets a spike because they're just, when he gets his chances, he's still an awesome tight end. So, okay. Let's get into the running back position. We usually spend a bulk of our time here. So we're going to start out with some of the players that Drew is higher on than consensus. And Drew, where else could we start this week? But Devon Achane, not Achane, it's Achane. I'm working on this. So Devon Achane playing at the Bills. Drew has him RB13. ECR has him down at RB25, which I'm kind of surprised at. I'm surprised the hype hasn't fully caught up here with Achane. But I don't know. I just felt like let's talk about Achane and the rest of the backfield. I mean, you've got Raheem Mostert at RB6. We've got Jeff Wilson Jr. looming to return. Like, let's just kind of get a check in here on this awesome Dolphins offense, especially the running game from last week.
Sure. So I think the Dolphins have kind of proven themselves to kind of be a hot hand kind of a team. And that's, I mean, that comes from the Shanahan tree, I think, with McDaniel there. So, but look, let's go back to Achane there for a second there. Formerly Achane, but he just came off 4 touchdowns, 200 some yards. The book on him from everyone, myself included, was that he was kind of a smurf and that we were kind of concerned that he wouldn't be able to kind of produce at the NFL level like we wanted him to, even though he's an electric kind of a player. We thought maybe a Darren Sproles kind of a role might be suited to what he was. But then he comes in there and gets 4 touchdowns, 200-some yards. So when that happens, you have to stand up and take notice. So the Broncos were formerly perceived as a fairly decent defense. So the fact that he was able to go off like that, and then and for consensus to rank him outside the top 24, meaning he's not even an RB2, I thought that's a little bit disrespectful, frankly, to the young kids. So I have him just outside, just on the cusp of RB1, RB2. I'm not expecting him to have 200 yards and 4 touchdowns every week for sure. But obviously the kid's got juice, and he's still healthy. He was an important part of their game plan last week. So being with the running back state, what it is, you know, I don't think we can ignore what he did last week. I think it was a real event. It happened. So as for Mostert being RB6, well, I had him in my top 10 last week. So it's really not wholly reactionary on my part to put Raheem Mostert at RB6. I think it's an endorsement of the Miami offense and an indictment really of the state of the running back position in general in fantasy. So I never in my wildest dreams would have thought that I'd be putting Raheem Mostert at RB6 in week 4. But here we are. So I was actually had quite a few shares of Jeff Wilson Jr. In best ball. I like the price where he was, and the process was good as looking for potentially explosive offense and a running back in it. I just put chips on the wrong guy there. So I don't know that when he comes back, he's going to have the role that I would like to see him have, just because those other two guys are just absolutely firing all cylinders. Now it is Raheem Mostert, and you know, he's in his 31 year old season, yeah. I think it is. He's up there. It wouldn't surprise me if the wheels started to fall off and Wilson had a pretty big role towards that season as the season goes on. So this looks kind of like a plug and play backfield right now to me. And whoever's getting the carries is a guy I want in my lineup.
Yeah, there's a part of me that wants to, like, I don't know, pump the brakes on this and be like, hey, like, they ran for 350 yards last week as a team. Like, this is out of the character for the Dolphins. But like you mentioned, the running back position is so bad that I don't see how we can't chase these points. We don't want to chase points, but this feels like an offense where it's worth chasing them. Yes. Now, the week before, they did run for 145 as a team. So there's a little bit of sign that something was coming before this week. You look at last year, they only had about 3 games where they rushed for that many yards or more. So already a good trend through 3 weeks. They've had, you know, 2 really good rushing performances. So, yeah, I think we have to jump on board here. I know a lot of people are going to be asking about Achan and if they should start him. And it's not a groundbreaking analysis, but I think when a player goes off like that, you just got to keep putting them in your lineup until they give you a reason not to. I would just hate to miss another blow up week from Achan, because probably everyone already had them on their benches. So I personally think you plug them in there. And if he burns you, then you kind of reassess. But I mean, the way they were using him, like, it doesn't probably matter that he's a smaller running back, right? I mean, there's so much change of direction and trickery and, you know, fakes. And I think he can get by being a smaller back.
Well, yeah, I looked, there was a graphic that came out, was like, I think the top speeds of the 6 top speeds of any play in the NFL this year have all been Miami Dolphins. So they should just be running in the Olympics, I think, frankly, just to throw them out there. But I will say this too about the Dolphins and these guys, and I know we're questioning, should we be ranking these guys this high? Remember, this is a team that everyone and their mom was tying to Dalvin Cook. They were tying to Leonard Fournette, Kareem, any running back under the sun with a pulse. People were expecting Miami to sign them. And they looked and they kicked the tires and they said, you know what? We kind of like what we have. So to me, seeing these guys have that success and knowing that they had opportunities to upgrade this backfield, or, you know, at least have the perception they would be upgrading it, and they willingly chose to stay with what they had, speaks volumes to me about their confidence in these players. So like you said, Wilson is there when he comes back. This is going to be just a deep backfield. And like I said, I'm just happy to plug in whoever's getting the carries. It's an offense I want a piece of.
Yep, totally agree. And even if the yardage regresses, which it will to some extent, but there's still a lot of touchdowns up for grabs here. So you might be able to get by just on the scoring. So yeah, I don't mind adding Wilson if he's out there in your league. I don't mind starting any of these running backs. Let's just enjoy this while it lasts. So I think that's where we're at on the Dolphins backfield. Okay. Player I didn't expect to be higher on than consensus is Najee Harris at Houston, Drew. You are RB17, have him ranked at RB17. ECR has him RB26. Najee hasn't actually been that bad this year, Drew. Just as we kind of all buried him, he has improved as a player, maybe. Maybe it's the offense, I'm not sure. But what are we supposed to do with this new Najee Harris here, Drew?
Well, if you listen to the Jalen Warren truthers, he's absolute trash and hot trash, and they should just cut him and move on. But I will say this. This might be the worst run-blocking unit in the league, and that's not hyperbole. I saw a stat from PFF last week that the Steelers were averaging negative 1.1. That's negative 1.1 yards before contact in the run game. So he's getting hit more than a yard behind the line of scrimmage, and on average, you can't, like, I don't care who you are, that you can't have success doing that. So I know Jalen Warren has a smaller sample size, and he's been a little bit more productive. He's also kind of played oftentimes in spots where it's a little more conducive with draws on third and long or dump offs when the defense is in prevent and things like that. But I'm not trying to slam Jalen Warren here. I mean, he's definitely shown some wiggle and some burst, but I think we're burying Najee a little bit too much here. So back to that offensive line, Isaac Seumalo came over from the Eagles. He was supposed to help. He struggled as well. But all that said, I think RB26 is just a gross overreaction. So even with his struggles, he's still getting 20 or so touches a game. And we heard rumors that Jalen Warren was going to be in a bigger part of the game plan last week, and that did not materialize. So as long as this continues where Najee's getting the kind of volume that he's getting, even with that terrible offensive line, he's still an RB2 for me in fantasy running in this running back landscape, especially in neutral or positive matchups. So here in week four, we have the Texans. They're nowhere near as scary up front as the 49ers and Browns. Those are two of the tougher defenses in the NFL, and that represents 2/3 of Najee's schedule to date. And Alex Caruso, who many of you know is a very good, competent analyst, said as far as bad as Najee's been this year, he's one of four running backs in the NFL to gain 15 or more yards on 10% or more of his carries this season, which is shocking because we all have been told that Najee's terrible and he doesn't do anything when he gets the ball. So the other three in that list are Devin Achane, who we just talked about, Jahmyr Gibbs, who's obviously explosive, and James Conner, who was just out of nowhere lights out against the Dallas Cowboys this past weekend. So Zach Moss scored more points than Najee Harris did last week, but I don't see that happening in week four. So for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, I was definitely down on Najee at times, but I never saw the Jalen Warren like next breakout player thing. I just thought he was a nice change of pace back, but I never watched him and thought of James Conner when he came in for Le'Veon Bell that year. It just was all of a sudden a bell cow back. Like I never saw him as that. So
yeah.
I still think the word's out on Najee Harris this year how great he's going to be, but I don't think that Warren's just going to steal this job and Harris is going to be a productive player. So yeah, I don't mind this rank at all. Against Houston, they have traditionally been pretty good against quarterbacks fantasy-wise, but you can get them on the ground. So this is not a bad matchup. So I agree with you. Najee Harris, he's a good play this week.
All right.
All right, let's get to Alvin Kamara playing at home against Tampa Bay. He is back off his 3-game suspension. Still, that 3-game suspension was a weird amount. I keep thinking he's out another week, but he's back after 3 games for whatever reason. So Drew has him ranked as RB16. ECR has him RB19. Not a huge difference, but I just kind of wanted to check in here, see what our expectations are of Alvin Kamara and this offense at this stage of his career. What should we expect out of Kamara?
Sure. So I was not really that high on Kamara coming into the season. A lot of it had to do with the fact that I was high on Kendre Miller, the rookie. I also expected Jamal Williams to play a role. When you sign the reigning NFL touchdown leader, it's kind of a signal about what your goal line intentions are. And of course, Taysom Hill kind of lurks as well. So I wasn't really that high on Kamara coming into the season. I thought I have very few shares of him for that reason. But I'll give him this. He's coming in with fresh legs. He knows the offense better than anyone coming off the street, entering the huddle for the first time in week four. And maybe RB16 is too high here this week for me, but with Jamal Williams on IR and Taysom Hill not really looking like that same touchdown vulture of years past, and Miller not really ready for prime time on passing downs. So from watching that game, that was clear that they seem to prefer Tony Jones in that role. So I think Kamara's gig is kind of safe. So I think why would you trot Tony Jones Jr. out there if you have Alvin Kamara, frankly? So to me, I think he's going to have a role in this team, especially for as long as Williams is out. And you're looking back on the games that Kamara played with Winston in the past, he scored a touchdown in 10 of those 12 games. And he averaged about what, or he's 10 touchdowns in those 12 games. And he's averaged about 90 total yards per game. So that's a pretty significant number of points per game when you add it up. And in this running back landscape, that's something I'm starting every week. So I don't know if he'll get quite as much run as we want to in his first game of the season. And I know that the Bucs are a tough defense, but it's still fair, I think, to expect enough volume, especially with the passing game included, to kind of plug him in as an RB2.
Yeah, I agree. The biggest source of his struggles over the past, what, has it been 2 years since Drew Brees? It's been longer than that. Yeah, mm-hmm. It feels like it was 5 years since Brees played. But the biggest drop-off for him has, one, been touchdowns. I mean, the touchdowns fell off a cliff the last 2 years. But then the passing game work did go down. I mean, he was averaging, like 7 targets a game back with Brees. It's more like 5 the last couple of years. So I would just say if you have him and you're kind of figuring out if you want to keep him, you want to, you know, maybe sell high after a couple good weeks or something, like keep an eye on that passing game work. We would like them to funnel the ball to him more in the passing game than on the ground, especially if it's not a standard league. If it's PPR league, we want that pass catching. So just keep an eye on the targets, keep an eye on the attempts. Hopefully this skews a little bit more towards targets. I was kind of hoping that with Carr. We'll see how it goes with Winston. But if this is a pass heavy offense, that's probably going to mean good things here for Kamara.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is fair to worry a little about the target volume when you're with Olave there. And obviously Michael Thomas is there and Rashid Shaheed, who I really like a lot. So there are some people there in that offense who can definitely, but there's no real tight end that really scares you really in that. Yeah. In that New Orleans offense. So I think that kind of opens things up a little bit in the kind of the area of the field where I think Kamara can do a lot of damage there. So I think it might be good it could be a symbiotic kind of a thing with him and Michael Thomas too. Maybe him back kind of opens up some of those lands for Slant Boy to do his thing. So we'll see how it works out.
they've had no weapons in the passing game last couple of years. So maybe a little less focus on Kamara will help free up some space to catch some passes. So yeah, will be interesting to see him back. Tough matchup against Buccaneers run defense, but he's faced him before, so it's not going to surprise him here. So, all right, let's get to some running backs that Drew is lower on. Drew, we got to start with Zach Moss home against the Rams. I think we've been low on him a couple weeks now, and he keeps proving us wrong. So why are we low? Why are we low on Zach Moss again this week, Drew?
Well, I think it's just because of how high the consensus is. Consensus has Zach Moss as RB11, so they're saying that Zach Moss is an RB1. I don't know if I can get behind that. So I don't remember where I ranked Moss last week, but I was definitely clearly too low on him in retrospect with Minshew under center. I should have at least figured that Moss would get some work in the passing game, which he did. He got a few targets, but even with that fluky receiving touchdown that he had, I wouldn't be surprised. That's his only one of the year, by the way, but I think he's still worth a start. But I don't think he's going to be the Colts' top rusher if Anthony Richardson's back. So it'll be a toss-up. It could be a 50-50 proposition when you have a guy with Anthony Richardson's talents on the ground coming in there. I think he's going to, there'll be some run options and things where he's going to call his own number. There's going to be, I don't know that he's going to just drop back and hand off to Zach Moss. It doesn't seem like to be the kind of offense that you want to run if you have guys like Richardson and Moss in there. I just don't see Moss, like I said, as an RB1 top 12 option. I think that's just, even in this landscape, I think that's a tall order.
Yeah, I've definitely been too low on him, but I can't rank him RB11. So yeah. They had 84 snaps as an offense last week too. Like there was a ton of work. There was overtime. He is dominating snaps. So you definitely feel good playing him if you have him. But I'm just not ready for Zach Moss to be the league winner for this year. So we'll see what happens. Maybe Jonathan Taylor will come back and spare us all this situation going forward. So, all right, let's get to Aaron Jones.
I wouldn't hold my breath on that, but yeah, we'll see.
Yep. That's going to be a fascinating situation. Yeah. So we'll see what if Taylor feels like playing for this team anymore. Maybe a couple wins will help. Maybe you'll have a little more motivation to come back. So we'll see. All right. Aaron Jones home against the Lions. You have RB22. ECR has RB14. I figure we could check in on Jones and AJ Dillon here too. You're a little bit lower on Dillon as well. What do you think about this Packers backfield heading home game against Detroit here?
Sure. Well, Jones is coming off an injury that has a fairly high rate of aggravation. That's the hamstring. We've all seen that happen before with players. They come back from their hamstring a little too soon, and then they all of a sudden they're out for a few more weeks. And that's I'm kind of worried a little bit about him and Christian Watson to a lesser extent. I think Watson was pretty close to playing last week from what I gather, but he was kind of like a later scratch. So, but I'm a little worried about both of them since they're playing on Thursday and they're missing out on those extra few days of rest that they could potentially need that they would have if they played a Sunday or Monday game. So, that said, though, given his ceiling, I'm willing to roll the dice with Aaron Jones as my running back too. I probably drafted him as my running back two or maybe even running back one. And chances are I probably don't have a better option. So you spent that draft capital on him. If he's able and to play, the team deems that he's ready, he thinks he's ready, then you roll with him and you see and you kind of cross your fingers that he stays healthy and that he's productive. So as for Dylan, he's had some opportunities with volume with Jones out there. He actually looked halfway decent to start the game last week, but then kind of stalled when defenses adjust a little bit. He never seemed to really rebound. He doesn't have any wiggle or shake really. He's just kind of is what he is. It's kind of your straightforward. What was it? Kevin Mack of the Browns kind of, you know, if you need 2 yards, Kevin Mack will give you 3 yards. If you need 4 yards, Kevin Mack gets you 3 yards. I think that's kind of what AJ Dillon is. And that's just kind of, it's just not that exciting of a player, unfortunately. So he does what he does. He gets some short yardage, but I really don't want him in my lineup as anything more than an emergency running back two or a bye week flex option in weeks in which he draws a positive matchup. Now I could revisit that if this Green Bay offense takes another step when Watson comes back and they go from being to being, you know, a promising offense to a prolific offense. And in that case, you have touchdown possibilities and things start entering the picture. And then also more positive game scripts where Dylan would probably play a larger role than he would be in virtual ones right now. So I'm kind of off AJ Dillon right now. I mean, if I have a spot to roster him as a bench player, I might do that, but chances are there's probably more exciting options, opportunities out there. I'm definitely starting Aaron Jones. I'm just kind of tempering my expectations this week.
I'm right with you on Dylan. He's just, I think we have to consider that maybe he's just not that good at this point. I mean, we just haven't seen any explosion out of him. He's had the chance to have these games to himself and it hasn't really happened. So yeah, I agree with you. And then this Detroit matchup, and they've given up the 13th fewest points to opposing running backs, and they've faced the Falcons, the Seahawks, and the Chiefs. So it's not like they've played, you know, a bunch of backup quarterbacks and poor running games. So they really shut down Bijan and Algier last week. So Lions defense is looking pretty decent so far. So, I'm kind of out on Dylan, and I totally get being afraid of a re-injury with Aaron Jones. It feels like we've been down this road with Jones before. So, I agree with all those points.
All right.
Well, let's get to our Discord. It's usually a sit start question of the day, but this is just kind of more of a general question. PL Plus, we've got our awesome Discord community talking with everyone and pitcher list and QB list side of things. Just a lot of fun. So today we got a message from Mudcat Dan Federer. Great tag there. He asked if Samaje Perine is a cut at this point. He said he could take a flyer on Rashee Rice. But P. Ryan's really the only guy you could drop for him right now. So would you make that move, drop Samaje Perine for Rashee Rice for the Chiefs?
Yes, I would in a heartbeat. So Samaje Perine was supposed to be productive right now. So when you drafted Samaje Perine, you were looking for week one, week two, week three, up to week probably five or six production with the understanding that Javonte Williams is coming back from two shredded knee ligaments and that they're going to be leaning on Perine to kind of help carry the load, especially in a passing game. So you looked at that as a sneaky way to get some early production in your lineup, and that just has not been the situation at all. So Javonte Williams is playing a lot more than we anticipated. He's playing okay, but he's not really lighting it on fire. But Perine's been barely playing, so he's not getting a whole lot of looks in the offense. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. And I kind of feel like his ceiling is what it is, and it's not high. So I don't think that holding on to Perine is going to help me win a championship. But I think if I have a guy like Rashee Rice, who has already flashed in his first game in the NFL, and he's got Patrick Mahomes as his quarterback. So I'm not going to say he's going to be the next Tyreek Hill or anything like that, but with Kadarius Toney continuing to shoot himself in the foot, which is what he does, there's opportunity there for Rashee Rice to come into one of the best offenses in football and play a major role. So I want that instead of a guy whose upside is limited in a timeshare.
Yeah, I mean, last week, Javonte Williams, 26 snaps, Samaje had 19, and Jaleel McLaughlin had 13, which, I mean, it was such a blowout. Maybe you can throw that out a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Perine, I just don't think he's got a ton of upside. This defense isn't good. We kind of thought this was going to be a ball control defensive team, and that doesn't seem to be happening. So, yeah, I don't mind getting rid of Perine either. Rashee Rice, he's popular this week. There's all kinds of content out on him. I got my brother picking him up and bragging about it. Like, I don't know. It's been like a couple of days of Rashee Rice hype here. So maybe this is his time.
Yeah, I mean, I picked him up last week in my home league just because I had an extra spot to do it. I actually had P. Ryan. I can't remember if I made this exact move, but I might have. Like, I cut somebody for it. It might have been P. Ryan. So, but yeah, I think this is the right move. Mudcat Dan, so definitely go for that for sure. P. Ryan had his opportunity here. So you're talking about a guy who specializes in pass catching. He was barely utilized when they lost by 50 points. So that's, to me, that's just it. Here's your walking papers. You're off my team. So,
yeah, I think we found Drew's burner account on Discord. This is his, just asking questions for his team now. So. All right. Any running backs we missed while we were going through this? Any, you know, last thoughts you want to get out before we move on to wide receivers? That cover most of it.
Yeah, I think we spent too much time running backs, given how little they produced for us this year. So, unless, of course, you're on Miami Dolphins.
fair point. All right, let's get to wide receiver. We're going to start with some players that Drew is higher on. We're going to start with Jacoby Myers at the Chargers. Drew has him wide receiver 21. ECR has him wide receiver 27. I find it's harder to find the discrepancies of wide receiver against the rankings. So six mm-hmm. is pretty substantial with Myers. So what are your thoughts on Myers here? Just what are your thoughts on ranking him higher like this?
Well, Myers is a guy who was really getting a ton of volume before he had that concussion. He came back last week and he was still getting looks. So he fits really well into this offense. He was picked up by the Raiders for a purpose. I mean, his coach knows him well. He knows the offense very well, and he just does what he does, and that is just find spots and openings in the defense and just takes advantage. And he's just a very sure-handed player. I think he's kind of a little underrated. ECR has him as 27. I think there might be a little bit of catching up still in the fact that people maybe aren't quite sure about, is he all the way back? What is he? But and I will say this, though. The only reason I think that there's why – I might be too high on him is that we don't really know for sure what's going on with Jimmy Garoppolo. So if Jimmy Garoppolo is out with a concussion, if he doesn't play, then I'm going to drop back in line with consensus at RB wide receiver 27, because then he goes from being wide receiver 2 for me to back to being wide receiver 3, maybe even a borderline flex play potentially. So there's a pretty big drop down there from Jimmy Garoppolo in Las Vegas. So it's just definitely something to watch.
Hopefully he can get on the field, because the Chargers defense has given up the most points to wide receivers this year. So it's a great matchup. And if you look at the kind of distribution for the Raiders, last week, 20 targets to Devontae Adams, 12 to Jacoby Myers, 17 carries to Josh Jacobs. That's it. Like, there's nobody else getting any work here. So Myers has looked really good. And I was just thinking while you were talking, I think they got the better end of the Patriots switch of Jacoby Myers for Juju Smith-Schuster. So I think Jacoby Myers looks like a little bit better of a player at this point than Juju. So I'm not sure what the Patriots were thinking, but they have to deal with that one now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Well, we talked about, Mike Williams is out for the season with an ACL. So it's a bummer for him, but there's also a big opportunity here for the Chargers now. So what do you think here on Quentin Johnson and Josh Palmer, kind of the expected heir apparents here? You're three spots higher on Quentin Johnson than consensus. You're online with Palmer. But what do you think rest of season? Are you going to take kind of the maybe short-term option here with Palmer and hope you can carry some momentum, or are you holding out hope here for Quentin Johnson to break out as a rookie as the season goes on?
Well, I think it depends on the situation. So if I need a short term fix at wide receiver and I'm like five, like on the cusp of being 500, if I'm 1-2 or even if I'm 0-3 and I'm trying to make up some ground right now, then I need Josh Palmer on my team, because I think he's going to see more targets than QJ right off the bat. But for the rest of the season, I want Quentin Johnson. So Quentin Johnson, I think, profiles really as that outside receiver. I think that's really what he's drafted to be, because Mike Williams in the last year of his contract. So I kind of feel like they drafted Quentin Johnson potentially to be the heir apparent in case they're not able to re-sign Mike Williams. He has the size, he has the speed. So to me, I think he's the one that I kind of want in that, especially you got a guy like Keenan Allen on your team that you can kind of learn from and all the nuances of the position. I think it's a good situation for him to kind of grow as the season goes. And I can absolutely see QJ being a factor down the fantasy playoff stretch. So if I am sitting pretty at 2-1, or if I'm sitting pretty at 3-0, then I want to get QJ on my team and let everybody else have Josh Palmer. And then we'll kind of see what happens when the playoffs roll around.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm always a little skeptical on these players like Palmer. They've had their chances and just haven't quite grabbed it yet in their career. He's certainly had chances with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams getting hurt. So, yeah, I think Quentin Johnson, I mean, he's billed as a really good run after catch, yards after catch guy. You know, you have a couple dependable options like Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler to take the safe, you know, move the change targets and just scheme up some stuff from Quentin Johnson. So, yeah, I think he's got some upside. Palmer, just for reference, you got him wide receiver 45 this week. So you've got him ahead of like Jahan Dotson, who's been struggling, Marquise Brown. That's probably mainly just because of a bad matchup at San Francisco. But so he's still kind of in the flex range. His production last week was on a big play touchdown that seemed a little bit lucky. So I don't know. I can understand you have him ranking low, but I don't think he's the worst flex play ever. But yeah, long term, I think Johnson could really take this job from him.
I agree. I thought it was kind of rich. Some people were spending upwards of $30, $40 on Josh Palmer with their fab. I thought that was kind of rich. I think I bid for him one league was $9. And that was a spot where I probably could have used him as a flex. That's what I was looking at doing. But I wasn't looking to spend a lot of money on a guy I didn't believe in long term. So that's kind of where we are.
Yep. Totally agree. Okay. Next up is Marvin Mims playing at Chicago. His rankings are not necessarily in the range where you're going to start him. Drew has him wide receiver 51. ECR has him wide receiver 63. But I just kind of wanted to know here, Drew, like, what are we supposed to be doing with Marvin Mims? That the usage as far as snaps is just terrible. They're barely playing Marvin Mims in Denver, rookie wide receiver. But his production is incredible. He's catching long touchdowns. He's returning, I can't remember if it was a punt or a kickoff, but he's just a dynamic player making plays. They haven't really upped his usage yet. Like, what are we supposed to do with this combination right now with Marvin Mims?
We stash and we wait. That's what we do. So Scott Barrett, Fantasy Points, pointed out on a tweet, I think about a day or so ago, that between kick returns and receptions, that Mims is responsible for 8 of the Broncos' 10 longest gains this season. And he only has 7 catches and 5 kick returns this season. So he's 12 touches where he's touched the football, and 8 of them are amongst the Broncos' top 10 gains of the season. So I don't know what they're doing. What are you waiting for? So he also leads the NFL in routes, yards per route run with 7.22, which is insane. And Tyreek Hill is 2nd with an likewise insane total of 5.09, which is like video game stuff. It's out of this world. And Marvin Mims has him by over 2 full yards. It's just insane that they're not getting the ball to him more. So the next two names on that list, other than Tyreek Hill, along with him and Mims, are Brandon Ayuk and Keenan Allen. So you're talking about really like elite company as far as from a production standpoint. But the problem, like you said, is usage. So they're barely putting him on the field. So maybe if the Broncos would play Marvin Mims, they might stink a little bit less. I don't know if you thought about that, Sean Payton. But here you go. So
just send him downfield every play. He doesn't need to know the whole route tree. I don't understand. Right. I think probably the situation a lot of people are dealing with is the one that I just dealt with a couple weeks ago. Maybe Mims is already rostered everywhere and it's not an issue now. But like I dropped him right before the week he scored the long receiving touchdown. So not last week, but the week before. Just thinking I could get by. He's not getting many snaps. I'll try to pick him up later. Now, I ended up getting Tank Dell in his place. I think that's probably the better move, but you know what I mean? It's kind of hard to compare. Like, would you rather have this massive upside from someone like Mims or just go for a Tank Dell who's actually playing and drawing targets? Like, I think those are some of the tricky spots we get in with a player like Mims, where it's like, I often am tempted to like, just give me the guy getting the targets who can kind of, you know, either hit or bust, and then I can move on. So I don't know. I just thought he was worth bringing up because I always get stuck on these players like Mims. I just don't know how to handle them.
Yeah, and Sean Tucker is another one of my favorites as well. Let's talk from a usage standpoint. I'm not a big Rashad White guy, and he looked very mortal against the Eagles after, you know, his truthers were talking about how great he was after he beat up on the Bears, but in an okay game. He had a decent game that day, but he didn't exactly have, you know, light the world on fire, but he definitely came back down to earth against the Eagles, and yet we still didn't see much of Sean Tucker. So I think as long as their teams aren't using them, then there's no reason for us to keep them around. So, but I think you did the right thing with Mims and Dell. I think that's the right move. You're trading a guy with upside who's not seeing the field for a guy with upside who is seeing the field and is producing. And I think that's what you want to do. So if I have a spot on my bench, I definitely want Mims for sure. I just kind of feel like he's got nowhere to go but up from here. And like you said, what are you waiting for putting him on there? Like, even if he doesn't run the whole route tree well, just his presence on the field, you have to respect that as a defense. It's going to open up things everywhere else. So that's part of the problem, I think, with the Broncos is they just can't get out of their own way. So when you have a guy who has his electricity, his ability to kind of make plays and just draw attention and make defenses stand up and take notice, that just to me is the key to unlock everything else.
Yeah, so I guess with Mims, kind of know your league, know what types of players your league scoops up. He's still only 38% rostered on Yahoo. I thought it'd be a lot higher than that. So if he has a down week and you think you can sneak him through waivers for a week in your league and then kind of pick him back up, maybe you can. But I think you probably need to stash and hold him at this point. There's just too much talent there, and there's a lot of college metrics that are high on him and just a lot to like. So, yeah, just kind of got to know your league, I think, on that one and how quickly he's going to get scooped up. So.
Okay, yeah, get Marvin Mims before it becomes Marvin Hims. That's right.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right, let's get to some receivers that Drew is lower on here. I was kind of having hard ones to pick out, so I kind of left it out to you, and you called a couple out here. So we're going to start out with Debo Samuel. ECR is wide receiver 11. You have him wide receiver 15. Anything beyond health here, or are you just kind of worried about the typical Debo Samuel kind of nicks and bruises here?
Well, that's the thing. We talk about how many, I hate the term mouths to feed. It's kind of like, I think it's kind of lazy analysis in a way, but with Debo, you have Debo, you've got McCaffrey, you've got Kittle, you've got Brandon Ayuk. So if those guys are all healthy, then it affects Samuel somewhat. So Samuel was not quite the same producer he was when he was one of the top three players in fantasy as soon after McCaffrey came over, because that kind of ate into his workload where he was really kind of making that hay to be that kind of a top option. So, but right now he's banged up. And if he goes and IU can't, then I'll fall in line with ECR. I'll move him up my rankings and I'll put him in the top 12. But otherwise, I'm probably going to be too high on him at wide receiver 15. But so that being said, since there's so much variance right now, I kind of like where I am at the moment right now with Debo. It is going to be really what's going to happen with his own situation and those of the players around him that's going to determine where I end up on him.
Yep. Keep an eye on the injury reports, because, I mean, a ribs issue, just with the way Debo plays, you got to be careful with that, because he's a physical player. So,
yep.
Definitely, we're not saying not to start him, but keep an eye on the situation. Okay.
Yeah, Marquise Brown was the other one I had picked out. So ECR has him at wide receiver 40. I have him at wide receiver 48. And I just think we're being a little too optimistic with that San Francisco defense there. And I know we said the same thing about the Dallas Cowboys, and yes, the Dallas Cowboys fell to the almighty Arizona Cardinals, but they also had no Trayvon Diggs. I don't think they had a plan for what to do if they had no Trayvon Diggs. But even so, Brown didn't exactly light the world on fire. He got a lot of targets, and I think he had a touchdown, but at some point, Joshua Dobbs' carriage is going to turn into a pumpkin, and I can't think of a better situation for that to happen than against the San Francisco 49ers defense in San Francisco. So I'm not expecting much from Arizona at all this week. I think they're riding a little high right now, maybe even be a little overconfident. This is a team that blew a lead against a team that was being outscored 60-0 before that happened just a week before, this magical win against the Cowboys. So I think we've seen the apex of the Cardinals season. I'm not really liking Marquise Brown here against San Francisco. So I think I might actually outright sit him if I could. But I have him at wide receiver 48, meaning he's barely a flex play for me.
I would probably rank him a little higher personally, but I totally buy into all your reasons not to. Tough matchup against San Francisco, obviously. The Josh Dobbs thing, like, it seems like there's two carries a game where he just is running wide open down the sideline, like with nobody within 20 yards. Like, you figure tape's going to get out on this offense a little more and they'll slow things down. And, you know, Marquise Brown has been producing, but he's getting by on touchdowns. I mean, it's kind of a 5-for-50 type game, just with a touchdown the last 2 weeks. So I totally get it. I think he's higher this week as far as can you play him or not. I mean, I would not feel bad about playing him as a wide receiver 3, but I do agree with you big picture season long wise. Like, this is probably a really good sell high candidate. I mean, the Cardinals are so weird. Maybe Kyler comes back and then it's the old Marquise Brown. That's a whole nother wrinkle we can talk about another time. But I do agree. I would be shocked if this offense keeps humming the way it has so far.
Yeah. I'm Brown's a fine dynasty stash for me. A guy I'm not going to dump in dynasty. He's a hold for me in dynasty. But I just don't. I'm not really bullish on him for redraft for sure for 2023. So yeah. That being said, we could probably move on to our Discord sys start. What do you got for us?
Yes, yeah, so this is from our own Justin Havelock. He does a great job as our producer of the podcast. So big shout out to Justin. I can't tell him how much we appreciate that. Gets these out for us every day. So huge thanks there. So, hey, let's help him out here. He wants us to rank our confidence level in these rookie breakouts. Marvin Mims, who we already talked about. Jalen Reed for the Packers. Devon Achan for the Dolphins. Man, just seeing his name and trying to say Achan, it's still tough for me. So Mims, yes. Reed, and Achan, how would you rank them as far as rookie breakouts? And would you start any of them over Drake London this week, which we could probably spend half an hour just on Drake London alone?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'm going to cheat and I'm going to put Achan first. Yeah. Sorry. Just because he just had that breakout and it was spectacular. So especially at a tougher position, you know, I want that in my lineup. And I'd say Mims second, just because I said Russell Wilson said something today that I agreed with, and he said that Mims doesn't have a ceiling. So when your quarterback's saying that about you after what we just talked about with him, I'm super high on him as well. It's not a matter of if Marvin Mims is going to break out. It's a matter of when. And I think when it happens, it's going to be spectacular. So I think I want him as my number two. And I think beyond that, we have Reed, who I like, I like the other two guys better, frankly. And with Watson coming back now, I'm not quite as high on Reed necessarily being as a potential alpha. As we talked before about how I'm a Christian Watson guy. He's got that size, that speed. He's already proven that he could produce at the NFL level. So people think that was fluky, and then he produced, and they thought that was fluky, and then he produced, and they just kept scoring touchdown after touchdown. So it reminded me of the old Chris Carter, the whole all he does is catch touchdowns kind of a thing when he's with the Eagles. So Watson, I think, is going to be that alpha most likely. And I think that's going to kind of keep Reed and kind of check a little bit. Whereas I think Mims has the ceiling to be far better than Cortland Sutton. We're still waiting on Jerry Jeudy to be what we expected him to be. And Mims has the potential to be an alpha over both of those guys, which I know it sounds bold when we talk about Jerry Jeudy. But so again, Shereen, it's Achan, Mims, and then Reed. And then I would probably start, of those three, the only one I would start over Drake London would be Achane. So when you see a guy score four rushing touchdowns or four touchdowns and run for over 200 yards in a week, I can't sit that, especially over Drake London, who has kind of a limited ceiling just from a volume standpoint. He's not getting the kind of volume that we want him to. He gets the target share, but you know that's great. But a very large piece of a small pie is still a small piece. So, so.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would have Reed last. I do like him. I really like him for dynasty purposes, too. I don't think you're going to know when to play him for quite a while or when to sit him. That's going to be a tough one. So, yeah, I would go Achan, Mims, Reed. And I would, same thing. I would start Achan over London. I mean, man, last week against the Lions, they got beat 20-6. You know, like they were trailing. That was the game script for London. He only catches two balls for 31 yards. I know he had the good week before that, but week one was a downer. I mean, they ran 67 snaps, like not the lowest number in the world. He was out there a lot. So if it's not going to happen last week when they're playing from behind, it's just really hard to know when to trust them. And yeah, I'm definitely taking that upside for Achan this week. And London, I still think he's a fine wide receiver three flex type, you know, maybe even higher wide receiver two. But if I've got some upside, I would start that over London at this point. That's just, Ritter just does not look good.
No, he doesn't. So.
Sadly. Speaking of which, he can't be worse than Mariota, and we're kind of same boat, right?
Well, that's not a very high bar to jump over, apparently, is what we just learned. So speaking of which, let's talk about Benjamin Holler's streamers for quarterback. That's a good segue, right?
So. Yeah, the Falcons could use a streamer, I think. Yeah, so right. I heard some talk about who is the Falcons backup quarterback now? Drawing a blank.
From Washington,
So I was talking about Heineke comes in and starts slinging the ball. Maybe Kyle Pitts is back, you know, maybe London's back. I could kind of buy into that. So let's see if we get Heineke in here one of these weeks.
Don't tease me like that. I've been hurt for 2 years in a row here. So,
all right. Yeah, let's get to some potential quarterback streamers here. I went under 60% this week. It seems like a lot of people are rostering two QBs this year. So, 50 under 50 is a little tough, but we've got Matthew Stafford at the Colts, 49% rostered. CJ Stroud home against Pittsburgh, 40% rostered. Russell Wilson at Chicago, 54%, and Kenny Pickett at Houston, 27%. Like I said, I think a lot of you have two quarterbacks. One of them's over 60%. But if you are playing the streaming game, which one do you like here, Drew?
Well, I think Russell Wilson against that Bears defense is probably somebody that I'm interested in, just because obviously when you have a situation where you lose by 50 points, you're going to be embarrassed, you're going to be hungry, and the Bears are terrible. So I think it's a good combination there for a potential blow up game for him in a good way. I think Judy's every week he plays, he's a little bit healthier. Although he did pop up on the injury report here, but it could be like a maintenance thing, just because he has been injured recently. So, but if something comes of that and Judy can't play, then I'll probably be a lot less excited to start Russ as a streaming option. But it feels like an easy opportunity to pick on the Chicago Bears right there. So also Matthew Stafford, we talked before about Tutu Atwell. We talked before about Puka Nacua. So when you talk about those kinds of players just absolutely going off, it's because Stafford. So he's a potential start for what as well against the Colts, who, by the way, are a little bit sneaky on defense. They're actually better, I think we are. So there's a reason why he's not. And I know we talked about that offensive line, too. So that one could blow up. I just feel a little bit better about Russell Wilson. So I do like Stroud. I think he's kind of showing us that he's every bit as good as the number one overall pick in the draft, maybe even better as a passer. He's definitely been impressive. So people are kind of knocking him for being 0-2 as another Ohio State quarterback and all sorts of stuff. But he's made some pretty impressive production out of Tank Dell and Robert Woods and Nico Collins. And none of those guys ended the season as players that we were falling all over ourselves to draft. They were nice, like sleepers, kind of like back end players. Maybe there might be something, but he's made something out of all three of them. And that's not easy to do for a rookie. So, and Pittsburgh's defense has been, so I can see him having a decent. So I think all of those guys, I think those three, I'm not as excited about Pickett, but I think Wilson to me is probably my highest confidence play, followed by Stafford, and then Stroud's right there with Stafford. They're kind of like 2A and 2B for me.
I generally agree with that. I would avoid Pickett at Houston. Houston has been not that bad against quarterbacks traditionally. So I kind of like Stafford. I don't know. That was a tough game on Monday night. I was at that Bengals game. It was a must win for the Bengals, 0-2. Crowd was fired up because they knew they had to limit Stafford because Burrow was hobbling around. It was a tough environment for them to play in. And Stafford's actually had a pretty tough slate so far. He played San Francisco defense in week two, week one against Seattle. It's not a great defense, but on the road in Seattle, that's a tough environment. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like Stafford. He's chucking the ball a ton. So I would probably slightly go Stafford over Indy. I think I'm just kind of afraid of the Broncos in general, but I understand putting Russell Wilson ahead. But I think those are the two clear ones for me. I love what I've seen out of Stroud. I guess maybe I just worry rookie runs into that Steelers defense, they confuse him a little bit, get some pass rush. I feel like we've seen that story before, but he's not a bad play. I wouldn't hate playing Stroud if I had to.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Let's get to the tight end. It's only week four, and it feels like we're talking about the same players every week in the streaming options. So let's go through them quick. We got Jake Ferguson against the Patriots, 46% rostered. Cole Kmet versus the Broncos, 55%. Gerald Everett versus the Raiders, 32%. Zach Ertz at San Francisco, 29%. And Luke Musgrave against the Lions, 31% rostered. So what do you think about the tight end streaming options this week?
Out of the two, I think for me, number one is Luke Musgrave. So I have him as my tight end 10 this week. So I have him as a starting tight end 1 this week. He had 8 targets last week and caught 6 of them. That's not an anomaly. He's been targeted heavily by Jordan Love. So Jordan Love is not afraid to look his way, and he's making plays. And honestly, he missed him right down the middle. There's a play in that game against the Saints where Musgrave had nothing but open space between him and the end zone. Right down the middle of the field, found the seam, and Love just overthrew him by a couple of yards. So that can make the connect on that play, and you're looking at Musgrave as one of the best tight ends in football, in fantasy football this past week. But that one play was a difference between having just a 10.9 point day for a tight end, which is actually nothing to be sad about in this economy. But he could have pretty close to doubled that yardage total, added a reception, and slapped on a touchdown. And you're all of a sudden you're talking about one of the best tight end performances of the week. So I think he absolutely deserves to be rostered in just about every league, and he's worthy of a start this week for sure. And he might, for me, I can make a case for, depending on who my regular tight end is, to just kind of cut him and let Musgrave be my guy until they start to stop throwing to him.
Yeah, I totally agree on Musgrave. I've even got some leagues where I have like Mark Andrews and I'm tempted to pick him up just so somebody else doesn't get him. Musgrave's been good. You said he missed the big shot last week. He just missed a big shot in week one. So there's been a few plays left on the table. He played 68 snaps last week out of Jordan Love. Jordan Love played 79. So he played as many snaps as Romeo Doubs did. Ran as many routes as Romeo Doubs did. So he is getting used a ton. He's producing pretty well. Yeah, I don't get it on Luke Musgrave. I would run out and add him wherever you could if you need a tight end, because he's young, he's got talent, and they're throwing him the ball and he's playing a ton. I don't know what else you need. 31%. I'm shocked that he's still just rostered as lowly as he is.
Yeah, and I also like Gerald Everett at two as a contrarian play to the whole the Palmer and QJ discussion we had before. So you look at Everett there. He's a solid player. He knows how to work that zone. He knows the setup in there, and he's productive. So if you included, I think it was Ian Harditz I was listening to, probably back in August. We're listening to some draft rankings and things like that, and listening to some of the other analysts breaking down some of these players. He mentioned that if you included the playoffs, that Everett would have been a top 10 tight end last year. That he's had he had enough, you know, solid production last year to include that one game from the playoffs. That's where he would have finished. So you look at this situation now, and what if it's not Palmer? What if it's not QJ? What if it's Gerald Everett that steps up and really soaks up a lot of those targets from the absence of Mike Williams? That is a very, very conceivable thing to do. And against the Raiders, I think it's a good matchup. So I think Musgrave one and Everett two for me this week. And I think Everett's actually owned in a few more leagues than Musgrave is. But either one of those guys, I'm comfortable rolling out there in my tight end spot this week.
I'm a little torn on Everett. He played 38 snaps to 34 for Donald Parham last week. Parham's been getting the red zone work, well, at least scoring the touchdowns. Yeah. I'm a little torn in that sense, but they could play more two tight end sets with Mike Williams hurt. I don't even want to speak it into existence, but if something happened to Keenan Allen, there's some opportunity here. And Everett, as bad as this sounds, he has been catching two or three balls a game for 30, 40 yards. Like, he is producing some, like at tight end, that's a decent baseline so far this year. So he's been kind of safe, and there is some room for upside here. So I'm a little torn on Everett. I haven't quite raised him in my rankings yet, but it may need to start here just because the position's so weak, and that offense is good. I mean, Herbert's playing awesome right now. So I get it. I'm just kind of holding out maybe for another week here.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get on to defense here. We're going to go to the streaming options under 60% rostered. Thought it was a little lukewarm here this week. I don't know if everyone's already got their options this week, but I wasn't super thrilled about any of them. I'd say probably Bengals at Tennessee is the most enticing one. They're 58% rostered. Denver at Chicago, 39%. Vikings at Panthers, 8%. Houston home against the Steelers, 2%. They were just kind of ranked highly in the projections. I'm not sure why, so I threw them in there. Tampa Bay at New Orleans, 35%, and Jacksonville versus Atlanta, 29%. So anyone here stand out, someone you're going to go pick up this late in the week?
Yeah, I'm with you here on your Bengals. I think they're the play. I think Jacksonville for me is actually the second best play. That Tennessee off the and also back to Cincinnati, the Tennessee offensive line is just terrible. So yeah, the Bengals should really feast on Tannehill. But back to, as far as Jacksonville is concerned, we talked about Desmond Ridder. He's not a good passer. I can absolutely see the Jags making a very long day for him. Our own Michael James actually picked Cincinnati and Tampa Bay as his top two. So I think all three of us are in agreement of for Cincinnati is the lean here. But he also included the Colts, who are very, very low ownership on ESPN, 4%, and Yahoo, 6%, in his streaming article that went live today, so on Wednesday. So they drew the Rams They draw the Rams this week, and I know we've had some very positive things to say about the Rams. They started hot, but Matt Stafford was sacked 6 times last week, and that we talked about that offensive line not being good. So he points out in his article that the Colts have racked up 25 plus points over the last 3 games, and that they've notched multiple sacks in each game. They've got 12 of them so far this season. They've generated turnover in every game. That's 5 total so far this year. And this defense is giving up only 3.5 yards per carry against the run, despite seeing the 3rd highest total of rushing attempts against them. So there is definitely reason for optimism, as if you don't have any other options and people have kind of, even if the Cincinnati is gone, give the Colts a look. I mean, that's very sound logic and reasoning from Michael there. So I got to give a tip of the cap to him for breaking that down.
Yeah, and I mean, they've faced Trevor Lawrence, C.J. Stroud, and Lamar Jackson, so it's not like they were, facing, I was going to say Dobbs, yeah. But I guess he's a decent quarterback, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I don't mind that call Colts deep league. They'd be worth an ad. I would say Denver at Chicago, that I think that could totally pay off. I mean, you could definitely see Justin Fields getting sacked 6 times, and that works out. Man, it's just scary to play that defense after what they did last week against Miami. I know it's a totally different situation, but that one could pay off too. I just don't know if I'm going to make that call.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm starting to wonder if Michael James and Brian Hartman are the same person, because Brian Hartman is a huge Colts fan. So I've actually never seen both of them in the same room at the same time. So just for whatever that's worth.
You may be onto something here. Yeah. All right, Drew. Well, I think that wraps it up for me. We touched on quite a bit this week. Obviously, everyone should check out the Sit Start article, please. Lots of work goes into that. Lots of great stuff. But Drew, you got anything? Take us out of here. What's your last thoughts on week 4 here?
Just stay healthy, everybody.